curtain into the public attention. The rooms, as they are called, with their brainwashing techniques and it was a hit package, you know, and the Dr. D program, movies, and got some with the law, and some parents kidnapped their children, as it were, from movie called. That is, it is this, there's been a lot of hoopla, a lot of genuine concern as well as hoopla about cults in the last 10 or 15 years. And the cult which has caused more of this than any other cult is the moon. They're one of the more visible cults. In fact, they got the flyer stand up here at the corner of Prairie Ford and Bumby. I thought they were on the opposite corners of the street. They're all over. Some road is on the corners. And so they are a very culty cult. They're a fairly new cult, I say, compared to Jehovah's Witness and Mormonism. But so we begin. Now look at your bibliography, and the first one is some major works. I haven't been very much written. You notice the bibliography for Mormonism was quite long, and the bibliography for Armstrongism was quite long. Well, there hasn't been that much written on Moon because it's still fairly young, and it's a fairly young cult. Thank you. These are the major works, and none of them are very complete. But if you want to go and start a bibliography on Moon, maybe not resource, man. Scott, do you have any others that are major works that are available on the Moon cult?
Born Scott has a new one out there.
And we look down at B under our bibliography. The cultic authority is, of course, Sun Myung Moon. DP stands for Divine Principle. DP on page 16, it says, in this way, he, Sun Moon, came in contact with many saints in paradise and with Jesus, and thus brought to light all the heavenly secrets to his communion with God. We're going to see the role that Moon plays. He is not only the prophet of this group. He is, in the minds of many, I think in his own mind, what he's leading up to is that he is the Messiah. He's the forerunner of the Messiah, but the more he talks about the Messiah, the more everybody gets a very clear understanding that he's talking about himself. The Bible, as it were, of the Moon cult is the book called Divine Principle. When you watch these pieces, if you have time to watch very much of these videos and says, they talk about the principle, they talk about what the Book of Mormon is. As a matter of fact, this plays a more direct role in the Unification Church than the Book of Mormon does in Mormonism. Really, the Book of Mormon is very incidental to Mormonism as it's practiced on a day-by-day basis. This book is to the Moon cult what science and health of the key to scriptures into Christian science. It is really their handbook, as a handbook, got that? In other words, they follow it, this is it. Now there are other writings, I just give you a sample. The Farley Jones, the prophet speaks today, HSAUWC, that's WC stands for the Holy Spirit Association for Unification of World Christianity. And then some other works, but Divine Principle really is an important work. Now, we come to the general history. Sun Myung Moon was born in 1920 in what is now North Korea, from a very large family. In 1930, his family became members of the Presbyterian Church in Korea. Now, the Presbyterian Church is the largest Protestant group in Korea. You don't have to do that at all. Presbyterian Church has had their mission work in Korea very early, very well established, very strong church. So, he was a Presbyterian. He was thrown out of the Presbyterian. He grew up because he was a charismatic. He accepted the teachings of Pentecostalism, and then he added some touches of his own. And so they kicked him out. And I just pause to note that, notice how many cultists in their early history spend time among the Pentecostals or with that theology. Mormonism, as I talked to you, the Pentecostal church when it first started, speaking in tongues, prophesying, exactly like Pentecostalism is today. Jim Jones, I mentioned, was a tenant of the Assemblies of God for a while. Sun Doon, he went that route. Herbert W. Armstrong went that route. So it seems to be a recurring theme with these cultists. As he tells us, in 1936, Moon was visited by Jesus. Much after the pattern of Joseph Smith in the Korean countryside. And Jesus explains to Moon that Moon has been chosen to complete the task that Jesus failed to complete. That is, to establish the kingdom of God on earth. Now, later on, we'll see what he means by that. But again, you see the pattern. We study cults long enough to see the pattern. You get this leader who is told that he is the prophet of the latter-day revelation, and whereas Christianity has been incomplete, now it is going to be made complete. You need the Bible, plus you need the Book of Mormon. Or you need the Bible, plus the Anglo-Israel key of the latter-day prophecies of Herbert W. Armstrong. We need the Bible, we're going to see, plus the revelations that come through the Watchtower Society, according to the other witnesses. And so it's a standard pattern. Now, I'm going to give you an opinion. I think that Sun Moon is demon-possessed. It bears many of the marks, as I'm convinced that Joseph Smith was. We're going to see some of the marks of demon possession. For instance, his obsession with sex. The Moon cult became a sex cult, as did Mormonism. The doctrine of spiritual marriage or spiritual wifery, later full-blown polygamy, came as a result of lifestyle of Joseph Smith and some of the leaders. But it was Mormonism became a, it went from being a charismatic cult to a sex cult. Let me tell you something, that is a pattern as well. I don't know if you realize this or not, but a lot of the old mountain assemblies, Pentecostal churches, the old times, before the beginning of the charismatic movement in the 50s, the old mountain assembly that used to come to, when they moved to the cities and working out in the mills and auto plants, they set up storefront churches. Many of these were sex, called sex groups. That is, it's a very small minority of Pentecostals, and this is not true of Pentecostals in general. Some of these groups practice their spiritual wifery. In fact, they call it that. You would be married to somebody else's wife in the spirit, or if you had been sanctified and you lived above the physical body, you were therefore free to practice what we would call adultery. And it's sort of a common practice. Amy Semple McPherson, kind of the four square church, which was not going to be a Pentecostal cult. You ever seen a four square church? It's only something that appears to me, I've heard of her, in the TV movie or whatever. But their group was a sex cult. They were very pompous on the midnight, and they make 50 minutes in the morning. So it's kind of a pattern. And let me say this to you, that this is sort of an aside, but I don't mean to be critical of the Pentecostal approach, the charismatic approach, which is, to use their own language, to just let go and let God, just launch out into deep, the sort of follow your feelings and release your emotions. Just don't pull anything up, don't pull anything back. The Pentecostal preachers and leaders had a very, very high perception of morality. Because they put out the pyramid of the bedroom. They all very good with it. And psychologists say, and I will not cite them, it's not my feeling, psychologists say that religious ecstasy is a sexual experience, although most of those who are involved in religious ecstasy are unaware of it. You know, not plan to do that, unconsciously does, but it is a sexual experience. So that people, what I'm saying is there's a tendency of people to really, especially to get really lost in that approach, the emotionalism. Often it's not simple, and visions break down, and lust takes over. Well, I don't pursue that example. Now, what I have said certainly happens in that minority of it's not sure the majority of those are not the ballot. But it, what I'm saying is the instance is high, basically, the above what we call the average. Because of the nature of it. Well, anyway, but getting back to the more intense kind of thing we're talking about here, I'm convinced that moon is demon possessed because of the way that the form this takes, much like Mormonism, very much like Mormonism, where you have this idea of it becomes a part of religion, and the true within the true kingdom of God. In 1936 to 45, as he tells it later, Moon received a number of revelations, and these are the guts of the divine principle. You got that? That is, most of what's in the divine principle, as according to the story, were revelations that came to him between 36 and 45. Moon writes, "Ever since that particular encounter, which was Easter 1936, the earlier one, I have been in constant communication, that is during the spirit, with the living God and the living saints in the spirit world, including Jesus and my own church for truth." That's his own plan. And in the years 46 through 54, he preached his message at various places in Korea, began to gather disciples. During his years, he lived in North Korea. He endured several prison terms. He was imprisoned more than once, imprisoned by the communists. According to Moon, during his terrible years in prison, rather than seeking to be comforted, he sought to comfort God. And we're going to see how that works. It's a strange statement fits into his idea of God, his concept of God. But as well, you see, many religious leaders were imprisoned during that period in North Korea. Still are. And he was involved in that. In 53, he moved to Seoul, South Korea. This is after the Korean War, of course. He was older. In 54, he organized his church, the Holy Spirit Association for the Unification of World Christianity, indicating his goal, and that is to unite all Christianity, all religions of the world under him. Very ambitious. His wife couldn't take it, and she left him. And his church, which was known as, was well known as a sex cult. He interpreted the Bible in sexual terms. We're going to see that in reference. The fall of man was sex, not simple disobedience. And he, much like Joseph Smith, religious experiences were interrelated with sex. I've already talked about that. He's arrested, by the way. He was actually arrested for the sexual practices of his church. Broke the law. Moon today has a wife, and he also has a harem. You know, kind of like Jesus and John the Baptist. You know? In 60, he married an 18-year-old girl. He was, of course, he was 40 at the time. Married an 18-year-old high school graduate named Hak Ya Han. And this was called, and this fulfilled the prophecy. He called this, this was the fulfillment of the prophecy of the marriage of the Lamb. Moon is the father of the universe. He is his mother, and we're going to come back to that, and look at his doctrines. In 65, Moon began his worldwide campaign, founded of 40 nations, including the United States, and then he moved his headquarters to New York. What his reason he gave was, he said that the number one enemy of God was communism, and the number one enemy of communism was Christopher in the United States. Therefore, was fighting Satan in every form, but especially Satanism. Embodied in communism, therefore he needed to be at the center of the action, he needed to be in the United States. But some of the guess of the real reason is, in the case of many immigrants, the economic opportunities are faster than food in the United States, so that's probably why he came. The thing that's a lot of what he did after he got here. In the last 20 years, the Unification Church has prospered in America. For years, the Moon family lived in a 35-room mansion near Berrytown, New York. Stepped on various properties, including $1 million training center in Terrytown, New York. They own between 100 and 200 communal residences. Now, some of these are palatial, very beautiful. This is where the people, these people stay. As you see, selling flowers, many of them, that's where they spend the night. And many church-related businesses, such as the tea company, Titanium Production, pharmaceuticals, air rifles, and creek ranches, the New World Home Food Service, the business leaders, and the Art of Oil, they own, the Unification Church owns several
businesses. Also, well, recently the IRS, you probably know this, convicted him for tax evasion. And Scott said he thought he was in jail. My understanding was he was out of the country. He can't come back. He can't come back to the United States without being arrested. You might have to know. Didn't know that. I don't know if he's right, but anyway, he's been found guilty by the IRS for tax evasion. That is for calling personal property church property, and therefore tax evasion. Well. That's sort of a very, very brief survey of the history of the United States Church. Now we come to, and this is really, spooky, and hard to understand, some of the distinctive doctrines of the Unification Church. Now I'm going to sort of mention these. I've got these outlined. I'll try to tie them together for you. Concerning the Bible, DP, which means divine principle, page 9 says, the Bible is not the truth itself, but a textbook teaching the truth. Therefore, you must not regard the textbook as absolute in every detail. Anyway, now, if you notice, we probably won't know how much time we're going to be able to devote to seeing these videos instead, but they use the Bible, because these are designed to be shown in the churches to win people who believe in the Bible. If you don't watch very long, you find out that the teacher of this particular set, series, does not know very much about the Bible, and they proof text and allegorize like crazy. Left text out, take completely out of context, and allegorize it. The Bible definitely is not the center of the Unification Church. There's a divine principle which is. The Bible is used and exploited where suits their ends, but to say that in any way the Unification Church is based on the Bible is something not true. And that Moon demeans the Bible. Concerning God, Moon adapted, this is kind of hard to think about, the Oriental concept of yin and yang, which is relative and negative and positive aspects of nature. And He explains God and nature in terms of a duality or a dualism. That is, that God is both male and female. God the Father is male. God the Holy Spirit is female. And that it's like every plant and animal and everything is male and female. He points out that there's positive and negative magnetic forces. And that with protons and neutrons and it goes on and on. They got a principle called give and take, the Unification Church, which means God created the man and he gives to man, but man also gives back to God. So even the man to God, man, it's a give and take thing. Unification Church teaches that God is incarnate in his creation. It's a pantheism. For instance, they teach that a plant not only has natural processes going on, but a plant has a sort of a heart or a soul or a mind. They point out to the popular opinion of Robert. And that it all, in other words, it's pantheistic, which is Oriental. God incarnate in nature. That's according to Moon, that the creation, the created order, is an expression of God. Much like an artist's work expresses the artist, except that God insinuates himself, that is, God is really his end in a dynamic, immediate way in his creation. Now, this shows the mark of Satan, which is sort of a recurring thing of Satan. According to Satan is the, he thinks in terms of duality, again, opposites, give and take, male and female. Satan is the evil counterpart of God, equal in bargaining power with God. Now, that's one of the reasons, this is one of the many reasons why I think that Moon, this is occultic, as well as cultic, and that Moon is demon possessed. Because this, in it, Satan is elevated. See, one of the common mistakes that Christians make, believers in traditional churches make, and they don't have, in fact, this isn't said, but it's often assumed, and that is that Satan is the evil counterpart to God, kind of God in reverse. But that's what it's called. Satan is not the opposite of God. Satan is a created being, an angel. He is not God in reverse. He is not an evil God. He is created as a tree is created. And he is not omniscient. He is not omnipresent. He is bound by the time, space, and interim. At least he appears to be. He is finite. He's powerful. He's superhuman, but he's not divine. You understand that? And then Satan in the unification church is. He's the evil counterpart of God. And really, what the one of the things the Moonies are doing is trying to help God win the victory over Satan. And if they don't get the job done, Satan's going to win. And then, anyway. According to Moons, God becomes resentful, sorrowful, disillusioned, as he views the power of Satan to thwart the divine plan throughout history. God has lost his sovereignty. He depends upon men to overcome Satan. He is to be pitied. The true son can claim to be better than God and can control him. God is, and that's a very low view of God, which we expect from Satan, trying to put himself in the place of God and always does. But God is controlled by numbers. Now, you go through this series, you see this very clearly. Kind of like the Charles Taze Russell and Jehovah's Witnesses, numerology. In particular, I was thinking of Herb W. Armstrong. Remember that both Armstrong and Charles Taze Russell, for instance, believe in pyramidology, that kind of thing. And the unification church teachers go in right into number, the mystical significance of numbers. This lecture, for instance, we did time. He pointed out. He talked about how significant three was. You know, Jesus was 3 days and 3 nights in the tomb, and there were three disciples seated in down, you know, in the inner circle. And Jesus was 30 years old again in ministry, which is multiple of 10 times 3, and he preached for 3 years. And how significant is three? And into that kind of thing. What he teaches is that God created the world to be a kingdom of children. There's an element of truth in this, and that he is, is hoping everything works out well. We look at Moon himself. He's the modern John the Baptist, preparing for the coming of Christ. Christ is the third Adam. And what he teaches is that Adam was the first Adam, Jesus was the second Adam, which the Bible teaches, but that when the Messiah comes, who he means to be himself, this will be the third Adam. And we'll see how, well, the third Adam was born in Korea on his birthday. You figure that out. That's a pretty broad hint, isn't it? We look at salvation, and now here, this gets really kind of sticky. In this story, God, any questions so far? I'm moving right along, merrily. Taking y'all with me. God created an imperfect world that is, it was imperfect in the sense that it was not fully developed. There's an element of truth in that, Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were in a brother-sister relationship. The story is that Adam and Eve were created as brother and sister, much like brother and sister, and they were not, and they were to grow up to mature in their God-likeness before they began to, before they married and had sexual relations and began to populate the earth with children. The story goes that if Adam and Eve had done what they were told, then they would have become spiritually perfect before they came together, and their children, as the moon words it, good tree produces good fruit. If they had done this, if they had waited until they became perfect, then their children would have been born perfect, and God's original plan of having a world, the kingdom of heaven, as he called it, a world of perfect children, where nothing dwells but righteousness and joy and peace, would have, this plan would have worked out. But what happened was, now in it, and of course in this kind of mystical or pantheistic way, Adam represents God. An Adam-God theory, where God was sort of inculcated in Adam, although he was also distinct from Adam. That's that kind of oriental approach to things. He represents the Holy Spirit, and in this kind of mystical way. But what the original temptation was, that Satan tempted Adam and Eve to have sex before they were ready, before they were perfected. That was the original sin. The tree of life was Adam himself, and mystically was Christ himself. If this makes too much sense to you, you're in trouble. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil was Eve, and what Adam was told to do was to stay away from Eve, because he wasn't ready yet. But Satan, in the form of a serpent, tempted Adam, and he and Eve had sex, and then the God's plan was ruined. And then Satan himself had sex with Eve, resulting in the spiritual fall of man, so that the children born to Adam and Eve were not the perfect children of the kingdom as God had hoped in the beginning, but they were corrupted seed, bad seed. It's also an oriental concept. Bad, and that's why Cain killed Abel. That is, a man fell not only spiritually, but he fell physically. Now this is the doctrine of original sin sort of taken to an extreme. The idea is you inherit sin, inherit guilt, inherit the tendency to sin. Well, Eve seduced Adam, and you know what happened, according to the moon. And man fell not only spiritually but physically. So it's very important. That idea is very important in the moon, in the unification doctrine. And as he explained it, there are four kinds of sin. There is original sin, derived from the spiritual fall of Adam and Eve. There is hereditary sin, which is transmitted physically. Then there is collective sin, where the whole human race is guilty, such as in crucifying Jesus. Then there is individual sin. It's a lot of sin. And Moon says that if man can go back to the root and cleanse himself from original sin, it will take care of all the other sins as well. But until that happens, then he has to deal with his other kinds of sins. Okay? Now, so man has fallen spiritually and physically. God still hopes to have the kingdom of God upon the earth. He attempts to save man by raising up particular men called messiahs who will perfect themselves. And after they become perfect, and they will have sex with a, this is a sex cult, this is what we've been talking about before, with a perfect woman, and produce perfect children, and introduce this perfect strain into the human family, and thus redeem the human family physically. What Moon says is that Jesus, when he came to save the human race spiritually and physically. He managed and to overcome sin. He overcame sin and therefore conquered Satan and redeemed man spiritually. But Jesus was supposed to marry and have children and also redeem the human race physically, and which produces pure strain in the human family. But he was crucified before he could do that, so he failed. So God is raising up a third Adam. Second Adam, who is Moon, who will, and he has conquered evil, and he's overcome, he is perfect, he defeated it, and that it is his job to, or the job of the third Adam, to redeem the human race physically, that is to mate with as many women as possible, and to produce perfect children, perfect physical strength, uncontaminated by sin, which will then begin the physical salvation of the human. I told you this was boring. And so far, he's been working at it very hard, as far as everybody can tell. Trying to do this whole building, maybe calling or actually sure. But yeah, you can see how very sensual that whole approach is. Well, man saves himself through indemnity. Very important word in the new cult. He must not only pay for his own sins, he must pay for the sins of the people who lived previously. What he says is that there are three kinds of indemnity. There is indemnity where you owe something, is where you owe less, where you owe less than the original debt. There is the second kind of indemnity is where you owe, or what you owe is equal to the debt. But he said because of the history of the human race, because man has sinned for so long, modern believers have to not only live perfect lives to pay for their own sins, but they have to pay for the sins of previous generations. Kind of like Joseph Smith baptized the dead. And that's one of the reasons these people are so fervent. They are trying to become perfect and to indemnify not only themselves but those who came before. If a man, his indemnity is not completed, by the way, it's also very close to Roman Catholic doctrine of the result of penalty for sin and purgatory. If indemnity is not completed in this life, man goes to the spirit world to complete indemnification and pay for injustices. If you pay now, you pay later.
Y'all get warned.
Now, we're going to see later that he believes in spiritism, talks to the dead, and what are the dead doing? Some of them are paying, if they're still paying their indemnity. Yes, works. Salvation, it's the doctrine of salvation by works. That is, we must become perfect. That was the original plan, that's what we must do. See, what he says is, Teresa, to give you sort of the big picture, that man fell spiritually as well as physically. Got that? That's critical, crucial, understanding his doctrine. So that man has to be saved physically and spiritually. He is saved spiritually by perfection. But he's held back in that, he's hindered in that, because he inherited this physical corruption. Now, as soon as God, and so until man, as I understand speaking, until man, until the problem of his physical corruption is solved, then all he can do is deal with his spiritual corruption, but he has to do more to indemnify the human race. Now, once the third Adam, assuming that we pull it off, introduces this pure physical strain into man, then that will take care of everything. But until that happens, then men have to try to... That's involved in it, I understand it, but it's lust and, Yeah, that's very true. As a matter of fact, you can't be saved if you're single. Because I'll come to that again. Salvation ultimately will be universal. All will be saved, including Satan. Not like Armstrong is, and they don't get to this time, they get to next time. Marriage is essential for salvation, as Eric has indicated, because the coming Christ will marry and the union will typify the perfect family relationship. Unification couples have their marriages re-solemnized through a unification rite. Now, because you can see this obsession with sex, Moon, let's say he has a wife, young wife, happy ladies, and he has a group of other young women with him. If a couple comes into the Unification Church, he immediately involves himself in their sexual life. He says that, well, until they become more perfected, they have to abstain from sex anywhere up to 6 years. I don't know how long it is. 7 years. Usually it's about 6 months. I didn't hit my outline yet. So that is, they have to live apart until he tells them it's okay. Now, if one member of a married couple comes in the unification church, they can divorce their mate and he'll get another one for them. He picks four or five, and in that number he makes a selection. percentage, so they're getting married one of these. And he re-solemnizes all marriages. You're a married couple comes in, they are remarried. Why? Well, because salvation, because you cannot become perfect. God is male and female, therefore perfection requires the male-female union, requires a marriage. Much like woman. And a woman can't go into the celestial heaven without getting out of the grave unless her husband calls her up out of the grave. Very similar. Are you all following this? Is this kind of weird, isn't it? Kind of weird. Do you really believe that? Jesus was not deity. He did not rise from the dead. They deny the resurrection of Jesus. He was not God. He was a man. The last days began in 1917, shortly thereafter, that is 1920, the Messiah was born in Korea. Found his birthday, or very near to anyway. He practices spiritism, and here you see direct demonic influence. They practice communication with the dead, moon holds seances. He had a seance in 1964 with Arthur Ford. Who Arthur Ford was? Arthur Ford was Bishop Pike's medium. Remember Bishop? You remember that name? Bishop Pike, God is dead, this Episcopal bishop who died in the Judean wilderness. I've got one of his carved up man that lost, died in the hell. And Arthur Ford is supposed to contact him. Well, the moon is very much into talking of the dead, which is, of course, occultism. Anytime you have that, you have the direct involvement of Satan. Ford, by the way, predicted great things for the moon. He believes in reincarnation. Men from former ages descend from the spirit world into all the living. That's much like Mormonism. It's also Oriental. You see these patterns? Interesting, in Mormonism and in the Unification Church, you see this pantheism that's particular view of physical moral corruption, just in worse of the thing, and reincarnation, dealing with the dead. These things have dominated Oriental religions, the ancient Oriental religions, which have been demonic for centuries, much older, much long before the time of Christ. When Western civilization lost its Christian consensus in the 60s and 70s, while the demonic religions of the Far East moved west, set up shop very much in America, Western Europe. And this is an example of the demonic religion. I've already mentioned his preoccupation with sex. I have any questions on that? That's sort of an outline of his doctrine. Do I need to summarize for you? I'll try to summarize it. Yes.
Now, the two
just
have one wife?
Yes, one wife. She's called, they are the perfect married couple. They are both perfect. And, you mean theologically? It's going to be his job to introduce the spiritual, what he's setting it up for, it's his job to introduce this perfect spiritual strain, physical strain, into the human race, and that, of course, has to make it more than one of the things on it. As I understand it. That's just an inference. He doesn't explain that. But, no, not necessarily. Of course, he's very autocratic. He does exactly what he wants to do. Kind of like Herbert W. Armstrong. And men like this. He really is sort of independent. Well, next we come to the methodology, but this will be good. It's almost time for our break. I think I'll stop here, and this will be a good place to interrupt. The methodology, which has got been talked about so much, as I said earlier. First, money raising. That's a big thing. In fact, that's what Luke is really concerned about, among other things, money and sex and power. I've already listed some of the businesses owned by the cult. Street, there is a street corner hawking of flowers, peanuts, so forth. These are called donations. Generally speaking, these money raisers do not try to recruit new members. That is not their function. They'll kind of sell you something, and if you don't want to buy, they'll not talk to you. Now, sometimes if you go up and engage some of them in a conversation, they will talk with you. But most of the time, they're not. That is not their job. Understand? They are not recruiting. They are selling. Their job is somebody else's job to recruit. And most of them, I've talked to some of them. It's not all like it. I've seen some who were recruiting who were so tired and glassy-eyed they couldn't hold and tell the conversation they wanted to. They're not all like that. Money raisers tell passersby that the money will be used for emotionally retarded kids, drug victims, wayward children, a Christian youth group, none of which is true. For instance, the loonies say, you ever been approached by them? This is money for I've been told by them, for a Christian youth group. Or one of the things they used a great deal in the 60s and early 70s, I don't know if they still do that, I don't know if they used to, this is for a drug rehabilitation. We're trying to get teenagers off of drugs, and this goes for that, which is completely a lie, because, as a matter of fact, they do not have a drug rehabilitation program. It's not what it goes for. Less like the Mormon money, it goes to buy businesses. Money and that's what they do with it. And to buy a video cassette. The recruitment is usually done around where young people congregate. For a long time, they haunted the college campuses, still do. They want young people. They hold pseudo, as we look at recruitment, they hold pseudo-patriotic rallies called Day of Hope rallies. They sing the Star Spangled Banner, the big American flag. Moon said that the U.S. is God's tool to turn back the communist satanic threat. Young people are recruited by pioneer witnesses. What they do is they'll find young people. And one of the reasons they got the young people, especially college-age young people are they're in a time of transition. And during those years, college years, whether they're going to college or not, people are more open to new ideas than they are at any other time in their life. Many of them are, that is a time also when sort of what we might call some would call the natural course of things, which I don't accept. And that is, that's the age when children rebel against their parents, but, cutting the apron strings, to use an old saw. One of the ideas that is sold to young people, which is one of the main purveyors of this idea, is rock music. Says that it is natural and healthy for young people to defy their parents, at least somehow, go against their parents for their purpose. And by the way, young people in high school feel rock music conditions young people to feel duty-bound to rebel against their parents. They don't. They're weird. Well, they get them in this age when they're sort of doing what they're supposed to do, is rebelling against the old ideas. Some of them are going to colleges where the university professors are. Undergraduate professors are undermining the old values that they were raised with. So these, and many of these are trouble with drugs and alcohol. Many of them, I list here the steps in brainwashing. They're recruited. They are first of all, this confusion. This kind of, and some have suggested, I can't prove it, that Moon learned brainwashing techniques when he was in the North Korean prison. That's where the Russian communists have made a science out of brainwashing, and through their surrogates, the Chinese communists, they practice and really develop some of these techniques on American servicemen in North Korean prison. That's where they really tried out some of these theories, with Americans, and they found out that they first of all had to break down before they could. I don't know if you know about what brainwashing is, but it's very modern for liberals to deny that brainwashing exists, and that brainwashing certainly does exist. Now, there are different kinds, different levels of brainwashing. Basically, what brainwashing does is, two-step phases. You break down a person's personality, really, and their defenses, and then you put into that person's mind what you want in there, and it becomes a part of the person. Very difficult. get out. For instance, American Service men who were in the North Korean prison camp were, they often confessed to things that they did not do, war crimes, what we call them. And if you put those men on a lie detector test, they would pass. They actually would remember doing things that they had never done. They would honestly confess to numerous times. And then they would put these people crazy before the microphone and tell them that and put them crazy before the International News Service confessing these terrible war crimes. Men actually thought they had done it. Now, they found out, by the way, that they could not brainwash men who had, number one, either very strong religious convictions from the youth up or very strong patriotic convictions. They couldn't brainwash them. But they found out that most of the American servicemen had neither. And so they, now how they would break them down, they would use another thing. They found out that the old World War II method didn't always work. They just inflict pain in the place. That they don't have a high degree of depression, people tend to die after that. What I found out was that they could break down by a combination of, and this is what Loon uses, confusion. In the prison camps, they would take a man, and they would, first of all, the very important, the key element is fatigue. They would simply keep him awake, endlessly. They would arrange to keep the light on. Every time he dozed off, they couldn't wake him up. And then they would distort time. They would tell him, lie to him about what time, like they'd bring a meal, and maybe 20 minutes later bring another meal, and tell him it's been 4 hours. Then they would confuse him by abusing him and then being very kind to him, apologizing. The police would have one guy who's a bad guy, one guard would come in and just really browbeat him or physically abuse him. Then the next guy would come in and say, we don't like that guy, I'm sorry that happened, he's a nice friend. And then, but they found out that another key element was isolation. So by just keeping some men alone, they could break them down. So by a combination of fatigue, time distortion, and isolation, but keeping them alone, that they would, their, it would infect their defenses would penetrate. Then they could tell them, well, Boone does this kind of thing. It creates confusion. How? By fatigue. The person who shows up on these weekends, they go for hours, play volleyball for the hour. Long singing sessions, chanting type song. Way into the night. Very little sleep. Up the next morning. Never alone. Distortion of time. Don't keep regular hours. Go to bed at bedtime. Don't get up in the morning. Physical shock. They'll take cold showers. That's the indemnity. Remember that? Sort of punish yourself. They would alternate kindness and bravery. One time they'll just be love bomb. Or just really love them. And then a little later, they'll somebody come in and really browbeat them. What a sinner you are. Really talk to them terribly. Propaganda. They'll teach. They get these ideas in them. Once they break them down with fatigue and confusion and isolation, then they get these ideas in their head. And through loud music. Very hard to resist something that's very loud, especially if you're tired. Depends on like rock music, doesn't it? Rock music does this. Young person who does not have some who do have convictions, but especially young people who have no convictions. They can go to a rock concert and go all night. And they dance whatever they do for long hours with loud music. A combination of fatigue and the noise and the confusion that creates a situation in which the words of those songs really become a part of the person's mind, part of their memory, part of their value system. I've known young people who consciously were Christians, who consciously believed in the Lord, and who subconsciously they were satanic. They didn't know it. They came out and they were still feeling crazy. They didn't stand it. They came right down to actually how to see it. The conscious mind is not determined how to live. name of the club company, right? 99% of the activities during the day become their club company. The conference where they were creating the club company, they didn't say hey, but they were, they had enough situations where the message had been fixed in their mind when their resistance was down and destroyed by the heat and noise, all the within the moment. And they thought they had value, didn't have any value at all. Yeah, I guess I didn't have people on YouTube who think they have value, but he wasn't seeing how they were. He wasn't seeing what happened. For instance, the majority of the young people, boys and girls, in the youth groups across the state are regular, and who are some of the leaders of the youth group are regular having success. In regular. Majority of them are all across. And yet they consciously they have value, they come to youth groups and schooling, they're a part of the youth Christian culture, but subconsciously they aren't. You take the average youth group, you remember your youth group that came up through us? Is that some of your part pretty good-sized youth group? How many of them actually graduated high school without knowing what it was they did? How many of them were faithful to the Lord? I would guess around 30% of the time. Is that right? I think maybe the only one. Did they sing the same song as you sing? You got your prayer circles, didn't they pray? Did they meet? Yeah. Did they have values? Yeah. What happened was they've been programmed to subconscious level for too long, and that wins out in the long run. Who does? Yes. We have every year we have students from Bible college who want to be Christians, who think they're Christians. Strong desire to be a Bible college, but we lose out what they really are. And we've continued it out for bringing the text. And every college wants that. That's what they want to be and what they think they are consciously, not what they really are. Why? And so they control years in their minds, so with other stuff. And even then, you may think I'm being alarmist, but I'm exactly what I'm talking about. That's how it works. Now, it happens especially where kids, whether it's not strong, where you don't get the family strong in the religious condition. It happened, I knew that. I think it happened in the church where I served. Well, so what I'm saying is, you get people in this condition, then the propaganda takes root in their minds. These ideas become their ideas. Will you buy the concept that you can have an idea, you can have a value, not know you have it? So you find out. Because a lot of men think they're moral until an opportunity comes along and they become adulterers. And I've counseled many men and women who said, I have no idea what happened to me. I don't know how I did that. I don't believe that way. It just happened. I could shed dogs every time I've been told that. It just happened. They really were an adulterer. They just didn't have an opportunity. The opportunity came along, and they did. It happened. And anyway, let's get back to the room. I don't need to preach tonight. Then the next step is to destroy pre-existing loyalties. This creates psychological isolation. Why? Family, friends, country are identified as those who can't understand because they're under the control of Satan. Your family doesn't understand, they're controlled by Satan. your friend, your preacher, and they create this psychological isolation. It's very deadly. Yes, that is bad. Create this isolation. Well, that's how they get them in. How do they control them? Through fatigue. We're going to see if they have time examples. For instance, these young people who sell the flowers, how many hours they work? They work terribly long hours on low-protein, high-starch diets. By the way, the communists practice this in North Korea. They found out if people eat high-starch, low-protein diets, then decreases their mental strength, their resistance to ideas. Can't think fairly. It's interesting. Did you ever see the little 12-year-old, 13-year-old walking down Bay Lake in the morning? What he got for breakfast? Twinkie, cupcake, he got 7-Eleven, Pepsi, experience ghetto blaster. Get in trouble. Many kids, they're resentful. They can't make it. They can't think. They're just zombies. Partly because they don't get many. Their parents don't make them go to bed at night. They don't get their sleep. And one day, they want, which is usually high starch, low protein, a lot of potato chips, a lot of cupcakes, a lot of candy, a lot of donuts, very little good food. Anyway, they purposely feed these people who raise the money. They purposely feed them like from this kind of diet because it keeps them under control. The profile of a also constant intense interrogation and exhortation. They're always after them. For instance, during the early days, they can't even go to the bathroom alone. There's always somebody with them, talking to them, interrogating them, warning them, persuading them. The profile of a Moody is glassy-eyed, frozen smile. You ever seen them? Ever talk with them? I've had some that just couldn't hardly see it. It's actually going to glaze over from fatigue and all the whole process. They're glassy-eyed, frozen smile, earnest, sincere, committed, with high moral character, neat, pleasant, polite, beardless, well-barbered, innocent appearance. Very much victim. I feel sorry for the Moody victims. I do anybody I've ever met. They're really sorry. I tried to have a conversation with someone by talking to a machine about the breakdown. They do break down. A lot of suicide among these people. Moon says to his disciples, "I am a thinker. I am your brain. I think for you." Devotee, did you know this? Bow and pray before an enlarged portrait of Reverend Moon. These centers are the big shrine, Moon's huge blown up photograph, candles burning in front of it. They bow and pray before Jimmy Fleck, bow and pray before the picture. Very demonic. Well, the last thing I point out is that the Moon cult is a political force. The Unification Church spends huge sums in lobbying, and many of our congressmen and senators have fallen under the heavy influence of the Moon. Especially from the girls. The girls prostitute themselves to government leaders, if necessary, to get their favor in supporting certain laws. Remember House Speaker Carl Albert? He's not House Speaker anymore. He was, in his latter days, left his control of the Moon. They are very active in Washington. Now, since Moon got indicted, Dave, some of Moon got indicted, not very much. Let me, if you're interested in, I don't think I put this in the bibliography. There's an article in, this was from 17 magazine. You know the magazine 17? It's a teenager's magazine. And there's an article, this is back in July 76, and it's the story of a young girl why I quit the Moon cult. And very, very interesting, very well written. Let me just share. She talks about
how she got into it, sort of general pattern. She says, I'm love bombed. She has a thing called love bombing. Kids who are alienated from their parents and insecure and just love them to death. She says, the lectures seem boring, but the young people I meet are so appealing that I'm back next week and the next. I know now this is a center for unification church at Moonhead. Many of the kids live here. Everyone tells me Moon is the Messiah. He's higher than Jesus. God speaks to him and wants him to rule the world. But I dig that he's outgoing people, clean cut, happy all the time, no displays of anger or childishness. But she goes on to tell me she found out that the beauty of these ambulant, vivacious young people that she meets at early meetings, when she gets into it, she finds out that they aren't that way at all, that that's a sham, that they act that way, but that really they're desperate. They have, but that's part of this program. They have to act that way to find out what they were put on. Talks about kneeling and praying to the picture. Listen to this. This is why I wanted to read this to you. She said, my world is turned upside down. From the instant I commit my life to Reverend Moon, the atmosphere changes drastically. I'm flown with 15 others to a communal center in Los Angeles, the location unknown to my father and mother. What they do is they recruit a young person in one area. If they can, they put them to work in another area. Get them away from their parents, their friends, the church. My shoulder-length hair is chopped into a pixie by other Moonies to discourage vanity. Makeup is forbidden. I'm ordered to dress modestly in a hand-me-down skirt and blouse and knee socks. The aura of warm acceptance that surrounded the lecture and drill is supplanted by an exhausting, rigid routine. Listen to this. Like thousands of Moonies across the country, I work all day, every day, selling carnations to raise money for the movement. Up at 4 a.m., rattling through the streets with other teens in a seatless van by 5 o'clock, heading for shopping centers or business districts. Breakfast is Chinese rice balls or cereal and candy served in the van, milk spilling all over. Teen captains whip us into an evangelical frenzy with songs, Bible verses, prayers, chants. We each call out our determination, quote, the amount we vow we'll personally raise that day. No one can outbound an amount less than $100. Some caught up in the moment spend $1,000 on the street until the money is made, no matter how long it takes. Rarely back before midnight at 1 a.m. The other four, bed at 1. You do that 7 days a week, very long. See how well people can think. So our students try.
Doesn't work.
Rarely back before midnight or 1 a.m. Dinner is vegetables, starches, no meat, often too beat to eat. They don't eat anything, it's too tired. Testimonials about interesting experiences of the day with emphasis on visions and mystical revelations of Reverend Moon. More Bible, more drumming about Moon as Messiah, more singing to drive away evil spirits. Collapse in sleep until the next day begins before dawn. All emotion, everything is handled by the center director. If I sing too loud, he tells me how to sing. If I want to eat or sit with different people, he says no. If I feel like crying, he snaps, don't cry tears for yourself. There are no newspapers, no TV, no talk of the outside world. It goes on. He sort of gets a general picture. She said later on, therapists, when she required a great deal of therapy to come out of it, she said later on, therapists explained the techniques that were used to indoctrinate me. Sleep deprivation, protein deficient food, repetitious drilling, isolation, exploitation of fear and guilt. These are the methods that have been employed to brainwash prisoners of war. So that's why I say many point out, and I think they're right, that Moon learned those techniques in the prison. Any questions on that? Some of this you already knew. I could have turned this page. Anybody got this page?
I do.
Danny Gabbard may want to. Sorry, Danny. Now, let me, I want to show the, yes. Sometimes, yeah. Now, she tells about the son who, she says that they committed murder. She said they had some leaders or some people tried to get out and they would die by strain. They would find some train and they were marked. She said there were many suicides. The son's suicide, not suicide, but the murders, maybe the terrorist suicide. But often they have to be, some parents have kidnapped them. but the ACLU can't have that, you know, because kidnapped men can't get them out. And I forget how she got out, quite drastic, but you know, yeah.
Because exactly about the moon, the enemy now, oh yeah, well, they can say, you know,
yeah. Yeah. Reincarnation, spiritism, and the part of the dead. Okay, now what I want to show you in the yes, Dan, go ahead.
What ever happened
to I don't know. He's still doing business. He was in jail for a while. But he got indicted for one case of the deprogramming. What he would do is just grab, go get him and give him some rest and some good food, sit him down and just drill and ask him now if that's true, is this true? Make him think. You know, make him, you know, well, how can this be true? I mean, well, I never thought of it, you know. Just make him think. And then it worked many times. You were telling me about a girl who visited over at Merritt Island. She's an ex-member who was deprogrammed.
Yeah. It seems like both of the
women
are white
and
still flat.
It's like you'd like. I noticed recently a lot of Koreans over here. These things people from Korea over here. Okay, let me, what I want to, any other questions on music? What I want to show you is the opening, just the first minute or so of this first, this is cassette number one, which sort of, he makes moves claims, and then I want to give you a sample of the teaching on the original, on the fall of man. I told you about the sexual aspect of the fall of man. Let me, I'm not used to working this. I think I know what I'm doing. Okay? Can y'all see
Richardson of the University of Toronto has studied the unification principles, but they are perhaps the most significant statement of theology in the 20th century. The media, on the other hand, mocked the idea that a Korean man, Reverend Moon, should come to the United States and teach this nation something about Christianity. We all know that the unification church has been very controversial. Every great religious teacher has been controversial. In the following videotape, we present a brief overview of the unification principle. I have found them in my own life to give me a great guide for relationship with God and relationship to my fellow human beings. They offer me a basis for spiritual life and a way to live well in the world. We present these tapes to you as our offering, our sharing, so that you may share with us your response, your inspiration, and your vision. We hope then, in our mutual sharing, that we can come closer to God and thus closer to each other.
Hello, my name is Reverend Patrick Hickey. I'm here today to introduce to you the unification principle, the teaching of the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Reverend Moon received a revelation on an Easter Sunday morning in 1936 while in prayer. From that moment, he began a quest to understand what Jesus' appearance to him meant and what God's will for the 20th century must be. Today, we bring to you the teachings of someone whom you've probably heard of, but you've probably not heard the man's teachings themselves. Reverend Moon, as you know, has been met with a great deal of controversy, and there are many who feel that his teaching may in fact not be a Christian one. But when Jesus appeared to Reverend Moon, he appeared to someone who already had, as many of us do, and you who are ministers. He already had many sincere questions about the Bible, about Jesus' mission 2,000 years ago, and especially about Jesus' return at the time of the second coming. I think we all understand that whenever someone has come to the earth claiming to speak on behalf of God or having had an experience with God, he's often met with suspicion and even opposition. Surely that was the case of our Lord Jesus 2,000 years ago. When he began to teach the word that God had given him and that he embodied, people questioned him at that time and said to him, on whose authority? They didn't find all of his teachings in the Old Testament, and so they challenged by whose authority and by whose word and inspiration did he in fact teach. Well, Jesus answered them when they said that, and he said, my teaching is not mine, but it's he who sent me. And if any man's will is to do his will, meaning God's will, he shall know whether the teaching of mine is from God or is from my own authority. But Jesus said, if people wanted to do God's will and were sincere, then they would understand, especially when speaking in spirit and truth, if a new message was truly from God. Now, many challenged him in other ways. You may feel that Reverend Moon is someone who is even leading people astray and bringing a false message. But remember also, Jesus was welcomed in much the same way. In John 48, you see that Nicodemus, one of the Pharisees who had at least listened to Jesus, was questioned by one of the councilors and said to him, are you led astray also? Are you one of the ones that believe in him? For a few of the other Pharisees have. And Nicodemus gave this wise counsel to the believers at that time. He said, does our law judge a man without first giving him a hearing and learning what he says? Now they wondered at that time if he also might have become a follower of the Galileans, because as we know, there were others who arose from Galilee and other places who were thought to be Antichrist. And Jesus was there in the midst of that, bringing his new revelation from God. Probably the wisest counsel of all, though, in listening to a new teaching when it's claimed to be a revelation from God, came from Gamaliel, when he said to the men of his age, as they approached and wondered how to deal with the new followers of Jesus, when he said to them, men of Israel, take care what you do with these men, for if this undertaking is of men, it will fail anyway. And if this undertaking and this teaching that they brought of our Lord Jesus Christ is of God, then you will never overcome it. In fact, you may find that you're opposing God.
That's all I wanted to. I know you're dying to see the rest of it. But I'd say a word of comment on this. This is, you notice that both been introduced to this fellow makes the point that, you know, there's a lot of resistance to Moon. Well, Jesus had resistance, therefore, which is his fallacy, understood the middle. Just because resisted does not mean it's true. Also, I would say about the Gamaliel's advice, if it be of God, if it's not of God, it will fail. That's why that was wrong. Of course, Gamaliel was wrong. That was not an inspired record, an uninspired opinion. As a matter of fact, all kinds of things that are not of God fail. You can't count heads when you turn through. In fact, what the Bible does indicate that when Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth at all? That is, the fact that something prospers, and I understand the Bible makes it suspect. Because broad is the gate and leads to destruction, and narrow is the way that leads to life, and that the Christianity has always been a minority view. Anyway, I'm simply saying that's the male gave bad advice to him. Yeah, I assume so. This guy is I got this marked on the number, I hope this works.
I'm not saying it yet.
My numbers are right.
Rather, we have to understand what was the first cause.
The
unification principle looks with a new insight into the classic story in the Bible in Genesis of the fall of man. Because here in this account, we understand the root of our sin or our separation. There was the origin. You know, it's interesting, isn't it, how the fruit, which was seemingly what caused man to fall, has often been called a hidden sin. And even the idea that the original sin is the root also implies that something is beneath the surface. We've certainly seen the effects of sin in the trunk, in the branches, in the leaves that have flowered with such division and such hatred and war. But our problem again is we have never known clearly enough about the cause, the motivation, what God felt like at the time of the fall, and ultimately, how the solution will come about. You know, if you're really to bring a cure, you have to know the cause. One of our modern diseases, cancer, surely can be identified for its symptoms, its effects. We know what havoc and what tragedy it causes, but we haven't found the cure yet because we don't understand clearly what causes cancer.
Reverend Moon, after
Jesus appeared to him,
section here.
He said that Jesus,
you remember that the first thing he said to Adam was, "Adam, who told you you were naked? Did you eat of the fruit that I told you not to?" In other words, God knew that they had sinned and wondered why they were now ashamed of their nakedness. Why were they ashamed of their nakedness or covered as they did their lower parts? The reason is because the fall or the first original sin of our ancestors was caused by the misuse of love and a wrong sexual relationship taking place prematurely and not centered upon God. This is why they concealed their lower parts. This is why, like Job, who later said, "I hide my transgressions like Adam." He hid something that he was ashamed of. Isn't that what a murderer does in order to cover up his crime or to conceal his weapon? He seeks to hide the part that something has been done wrongly. This is exactly the case of Adam and Eve. Why should they have been ashamed? Why, if they ate a fruit and it was a literal apple or whatever, why didn't they in fact cover their mouths as if to disguise the fact that they had eaten a fruit? Well, we learned from this lecture that it was not the apple on the tree, but it was the pear on the ground. That was the problem. The daughter of God, the relationship first initiated and identified as Satan's crime, the misuse of love in an unnatural relationship. This was, in fact, the first problem and the first sin, the root of sin itself. What we're saying is,
you didn't know this class was X-rated, did you? Anyway, I'm going to call it off for tonight. We're about finished. Any questions? I just thought, you know, I really appreciate Steve loaning these to us, and I just thought I'd give you some kind of sample. I hope you have a kind of general idea, at least, of the moon call. Well, keep in mind, don't you be taking the credit exam next week.